Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hometown Ghost Stories contains serious and often distressing events and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
This week on Hometown Ghost Stories, the exorcism of Anna Eklund is the best documented case of demonic possession in the history of the United States. This episode is based off of the case notes of exorcist Father Theopolis Reisinger. This is not for the faint of heart. You're listening to episode 64 of Hometown Ghost Stories, The Exorcism of Anna Eklund.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 1912. The counselor checked his pocket watch before glancing over to the closed door. She was late. He was doing his friend Father Theophilus a favor by taking on this case, but he'd be lying if he said he didn't find it intriguing. He went over his notes again. Emma Schmidt, female, 30 years of age. Hearing voices. He looked up from his notes as the door to his office swung open. There stood a woman, about average height, with a small frame. Her hair was unkempt, and her eyes were sunken as if she hadn't slept in a week. She had a glazed-over look on her face, seeming to show an expression of pure apathy. "Have a seat," he told her. He glanced back at his notes as she took her seat. "Says here you had a successful exorcism earlier this year, but you're hearing the voices again?" he asked. She didn't respond, just stared off into the corner of the room with that glossy look in her eyes. He went on. "How long after the exorcism did the voices start talking again?" He didn't look up from his notes, just waited for a response. He was used to this with cases like this one. Most of the time, it was just some sort of mental illness. It was very rare to actually deal with an authentic demonic possession. He wasn't convinced this one was, but his good friend Father Theophilus was certain, and he trusted his judgment. Suddenly, he heard a low growling sound. He looked up and locked eyes with her. Her absent gaze had instantly transformed into a look of pure hatred. Her once glossy catatonic eyes were now a yellowish tone and seemed like they were boring holes through the counselor. At first, he thought she was making the growling sound, but now that he was looking at her, it seemed to be coming from behind her. Nervously, he slowly rose to his feet. That's when she pounced, moving faster than he imagined she were capable. She lunged at him, grabbing the collar of his shirt and spinning him around with an inexplicable strength that completely caught him off guard. She twisted his shirt collar so tight that he was unable to breathe. He frantically began clawing at his neck in an attempt to free his throat from her death clutch, but she was too strong. He lifted his leg and kicked over his desk, causing a raucous crash. After a few moments, staff members came rushing into the room to see what the disturbance was. They wrestled the possessed woman to the ground and separated her from the counselor. He gasped for breath and hoisted himself into a sitting position. The woman was hissing and spitting, glaring at the counselor with that intense look of hatred in her eyes. I'm Dave Wilkins, and this is Hometown Ghost Stories, The Exorcism of Anna Eklund. Anna Eklund, named Emma Schmidt at birth, was born in Marathon, Wisconsin on March 23, 1882. Her parents emigrated from Germany, and the family eventually landed in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Anna and her mother were devout Christians, attending church every Sunday. Anna's father, Jacob, on the other hand, was not only not a Christian, but he hated the religion and openly mocked it. He also mocked his wife and Anna for their faith. Anna's mother died when she was only 8 years old, and she was subsequently raised by her abusive father and his mistress, Mina, who also happened to be her mother's sister. After her mother's death, the abuse from Anna's father, Jacob, got worse. He even tried to coerce her into an incestual relationship, and when she rebuffed him, he became furious. Mina, who was supportive of Jacob's abuse of Anna, suggested placing a curse on her. Mina was known around town to dabble in the occult, and many believe she practiced black magic. She was also known to be an outspoken detractor of the Catholic religion, and many suspected her of witchcraft. Jacob agreed to place a curse on his daughter, and Mina went ahead and cursed some herbs before putting them in Anna's food. Around the age of 14, Anna, who had regularly attended church despite her father and aunt's abuse and ridicule, began having negative thoughts towards the priest and the church. She began having inexplicable urges to destroy sacred religious objects in the church, and partaking in communion made her feel physically ill. This went on for years. It eventually got so bad that she wasn't physically able to enter a church at all. One Sunday, she was standing outside the church before Mass when the priest noticed her. He called out to her, beckoning her to come in. She wanted to, but was overcome with a feeling of rage and spit on the ground in his direction instead. Disgusted, the priest disappeared back into the church. On another occasion, the priest approached her, genuinely concerned about her deteriorating behavior. But as he got near, she leaned in and whispered unspeakable things in his ear in an attempt to lure him into breaking his holy vows as a priest. Anna's condition continued to worsen over the years. Her contempt for the Catholic Church grew, and she began confining herself to her room for long periods of time. In 1912, the priest from Anna's church reached out to a Capuchin monk from Marathon, Wisconsin, named Theophilus Reisinger, who was an experienced exorcist. Intrigued by the details of the case, Father Reisinger agreed to assist. The first thing Father Reisinger, better known as Father Theo, would do during an exorcism was try to determine if the affected was either suffering from mental illness or faking a demonic possession. One of the tactics he would use to weed out the fakers was to keep two bottles of water in identical containers, one with holy water and one with regular water. He pulled the bottle with regular water out of his pocket and splashed it on Anna. She didn't respond, just stared at the floor, unfazed. The priest put the bottle back in his pocket and recited a prayer. Then he reached back into his pocket and retrieved the bottle containing the holy water. He splashed some of it on Anna, and she immediately began shrieking as the droplets sizzled and popped on her skin. The priest knew at that point he was dealing with a true demonic possession. The exorcism went on for a short period of time, and at the end, he declared her free from the malevolent entity. The exorcism was successful. He recommended she see a spiritual counselor and advised her to ease her way back into regular church services. For a while, Anna felt normal again. But when her father and Mina heard of her successful exorcism, they began plotting once again. Mina, who was an ardent nemesis of the Catholic Church, was also familiar with Scripture. She drew inspiration from a verse from the book of Matthew to renew the curse. When the evil spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept and garnished. Then goeth he, and taketh with him seven other spirits, more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. and the last state of that man is worse than the first, even so shall it be also into this wicked generation. Jacob and Mina, who were in the latter part of their lives by this time, died shortly after renewing their curse on Anna. Almost immediately following their deaths, Anna began hearing voices, and her condition once again deteriorated. She found herself sickened by the thought of taking communion and was again physically unable to enter the church. She even attacked her spiritual advisor during a session, attempting to suffocate him in a blind rage which she had no memory of. Her spiritual advisor realized the severity of the situation and reached out to Father Theophilus Reisinger for assistance. Father Theo agreed that the situation was much worse than it had been earlier and requested another exorcism from the Catholic Church. The bishop sanctioned the exorcism, but requested that it be kept secret from the public to protect the identity of the afflicted as well as the reputation of the church. This is when Emma Schmidt was given the pseudonym Anna Eklund. Father Theo thought it necessary to relocate Anna away from her hometown to protect her from public scrutiny. He reached out to his friend and colleague, Pastor Joseph Steiger, in Erling, Iowa, and suggested the exorcism be undertaken at a convent owned by the Franciscan sisters. Steiger was reluctant, but agreed. Erling, Iowa, was a city in Shelby County that had a population of around 300 at the time. It was far enough away from Anna's hometown in Wisconsin where they didn't have to worry about her true identity being compromised. Father Theo sent Anna to the convent first, wanting to travel separately. When she arrived, she immediately became problematic. A well-intentioned nun had sprinkled holy water onto Anna's food before bringing it to her room. When presented with the food, Anna began screaming and growling and hissing like a cat. They brought her a new plate of food without the holy water, and this time she ate it without issue. Once Father Theo arrived, he wasted no time and ordered the strongest nuns to hold Anna down to begin the exorcism. The first session began August 18, 1928, just one day after she arrived at the convent. The priest began praying in Latin, and Anna reacted violently, screaming and hurling insults. She began calling out the nuns individually, exposing their unconfessed sins. Nuns began fleeing the room one by one. Anna would scream in different voices, some deep like a man's voice, others high and shrill. The voices never seemed to be coming from her mouth, however. They always seemed like they were either coming from behind her or from deep within her. Oftentimes, the screams would occur while Anna was unconscious or while her mouth was closed. At one point, the scream was so deep and loud, it could be heard throughout the surrounding areas of the neighborhood, causing nearby people to come running to see what was going on. During a recitation of one Latin prayer, several people in the room witnessed Anna break free from her restraints and leap up from the bed over the heads of the nuns and land on the wall above the doorway, clinging there. Father Theo ordered the nuns to pull her from the wall, and it took several of them to be able to pull her free. Father Theo ordered the end of the session 9 days later on August 26th, partly due to exhaustion and partially because Anna was clearly taking a lot of abuse from the demons possessing her. The second session began September 14th. Father Theo began speaking in Latin, but not praying this time, simply reciting secular phrases. Anna didn't respond. As soon as he began praying in Latin, she once again began screaming and howling like a hyena. The second session lasted a week, and during the course of that week, she vomited gallons of green leafy substances 20 to 30 times a day. Witnesses recalled that it looked like regurgitated tobacco leaves. The baffling part was the amount that her body was expelling compared to the minuscule amount of food she was eating daily. At one point during the second session, Anna's head and face swelled into a large bulbous shape, and her body became rigid and hard as iron. Pastor Steiger feared she would explode. Her lips turned red, and her body became so heavy the metal bed frame buckled beneath her. Father Theo, Pastor Steiger, and several nuns tried to lift her, but were unable. That was when the screams turned into articulated speech. The whole room went silent as a deep voice bellowed out from within her. Father Theo demanded the voice name itself. It responded with Beelzebub, the Prince of Demons, Lord of the Flies. Father Theo asked how many demons were possessing the woman, and the voice answered, many. Throughout the course of the second session, other voices identified themselves, one of which claimed to be the spirit of Judas Iscariot. The higher-pitched voice claimed to be the spirit of Anna's deceased aunt Mina, and another voice claimed to be the spirit of her father Jacob and took credit for placing the curse on Anna. About midway through the session, a different voice claimed to be Lucifer himself. The voice of Lucifer warned Pastor Steiger that something awful was going to happen to him towards the end of the week. That Friday, before heading to the convent, he had another matter he needed to attend to. He was aware of the threat from the devil and drove slowly and carefully. However, while driving, a dark cloud overtook him, causing him to lose sight of the road. His car spun out of control, crashing into an embankment. The car was totaled, but Pastor Steiger was mostly unharmed. He arrived at the convent later that day, and before informing anybody what happened, heard Anna laughing in a deep voice. The voice mocked him for crashing his car, adding he was lucky the devil didn't kill him. Father Theo ended the second session on September 20th, after Anna swatted the Mother Superior across the room. The third session wouldn't begin again until December. During the time in between, Pastor Steiger voiced his regret for allowing the exorcism to be performed in his facility, but Father Theo remained cool-headed. The third and final session began on December 15th, 1928. The session went on for 8 days of violent outbursts, screaming, vomiting, and arguing with the horrible voices. On one occasion, the room filled with mosquitoes to the point where they had to take a break, only to find the pests had disappeared just as quickly as they'd appeared. On December 23rd, Father Theo had thought the demons had weakened enough to expel them permanently. He commanded the demons in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, to depart to hell. Anna, who had risen up from the bed to the point where only her heels touched the surface, shouted, Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, Mina, hell, 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 before collapsing back onto the bed. She opened her eyes and then spoke in her own voice, saying, My Jesus, mercy, praised be Jesus Christ. Father Theophilus Reisinger believed the exorcism to be successful, but Anna continued to exhibit small, mild possessions for the remainder of her life. She died on July 23, 1941, at the age of 59, just a few short months before the death of Father Reisinger. The exorcism of Anna Eklund remains the best-documented case of a demonic possession in the history of the United States to this day.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into Hometown Ghost Stories, episode number 64. I'm Jesse Wilkins. I'm joined by Rob Coakley. Hello, Rob.
I'm just really, really looking forward to the exorcism of Dave Wilkins. But we have to come up with like a good pseudo name for him so that we can protect him in the future. And I'm not sure. Do you have any ideas, Jesse?
Oh, man. What was the name that you had last week in the Patreon pre-show hangout? Because it was the greatest nickname you've ever given yourself.
Oh, it was Robbie Suedo.
Robbie Suedo is a great nickname. We'll give that one to Dave. If he needs it. Call me Robbie Suedo.
Yeah. Just call me Robbie Suedo. I like it. If listeners have no idea why we keep saying Suedo over and over again, that's because Rob mispronounced the word pseudo in the pre-hangout for Patreon members last week, and we are probably not going to let that one go. Mm-hmm.
Probably not. I want to wake up. Welcome everyone that's hanging out in live chat. I see the Stephanies are here, Papa Squatch, Janice, everyone else is hanging out. Cody's here. I think the other Cody was here as well. Two Cody's. We have the Church of the Cody's now as well. All it takes is two for us to create an entire church around you guys. Jessica, I see you. Huge shout out to Rachel, who's here for her final episode for a while as she goes off to boot camp on Tuesday. So thank you for your service and good luck out there.
It's very mean of them to send her on a Tuesday. It's like, don't you know, like, we have this show on Tuesday nights? You decided she needs to go on a Tuesday? Like, there's six other days of the week. We're important, U.S. government.
They're starting to break her down right after that.
U.S. government.
That's how they do it.
Yes.
A lot of requests in chat for hats and beanies. I mean, beanies and t-shirts, and those are coming soon. They're in production right now, as well as stickers, which we're going to do another giveaway for another 5-pack of Hometown Ghost Stories exclusive. Not the word I was looking for. Oh, they're exclusive for you.
They are exclusive.
Shout out to Annie watching on Facebook as well.
Yes. Thanks to people who are watching on Facebook. But all you have to do is type stickers in chat and you can be entered into the contest. You just got to stick around to the end of the show.
Stick around.
Hey, look at that. I just entered myself in. Look at that. Pinky asked, did you print off the Al Capone stickers yet? They are all Al Capone stickers, just so you know.
Yeah.
Yep,
pretty much.
Just like every episode. I feel like I just got baited into giving away a bingo card square there. So
you did. And now Al Capone is officially part of the Anna Eklund exorcism case.
You really should have slid Al Capone in as one of the demons just to see like if anyone had
just rallying off the names. Judas, Beelzebub, Al Capone. There was a random like name in there that didn't sound like a demon. What was the name that she rallied off? So she said Beelzebub, she said
Judas,
Mina,
and Mina. Jacob.
Who's Mina? What'd she do?
Did you watch the episode or
little bit?
A little bit here and there. In and
is
out.
Is that her
that's her evil stepmother.
Okay.
Stepmother aunt.
The aunt, yeah.
Yeah.
But what I like about the demons is like they came out like an NBA all-star team. It's like, and now at right shooting guard, we have Beelzebub or whatever, however you say it. And then it's like, then at center, we have Lucifer. And then, you know, we have like, it's just, they just kept coming out of the woodwork. It's a crazy, crazy story, but it's, that's what I was envisioning as like every demon got named through.
It is pretty horrifying. And we've seen this in a few exorcism cases where you get either multiple demons or it seems like they get the name wrong at first, or the demon is pretending to be a different demon along the way. And you get a lot of like really thorough communications out of this. And it's pretty scary stuff. So
yeah, the scarier part, and we'll get into, we'll go through this in sort of a linear fashion, but while we're on the topic, like a lot of the voices that were coming through while she was unconscious or her mouth was closed and she was not having a seizure, but like, it looked like she was having a seizure, right? Her eyes rolled back in the head, mouth closed, and the voices were coming from like her throat, which is weird. Articulated speech, you know, the exorcist was having straight up conversations with the voices that were coming from this woman, which is very scary.
Very similar to the Enfield poltergeist. Now, obviously that was a poltergeist and probably not a demon, but they had theorized that it could have been a demonic possession as well. But she was doing that whole ventriloquist kind of talking from the back of her throat as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But she had those big giant teeth to block it. So you don't really know if she was moving her mouth as much, but it seems like this one, she wasn't moving her mouth at all.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in this that you look at these cases and you'd say, what could be real and what could be not real? What could be exaggerated? And they did a good job of weeding out a lot of the things that would make it seem like it's not real. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll get into that. But I mean, this took place in the 1920s, right? So it's a long time ago. And it seems like exorcisms are something that don't really happen anymore, you know, given the proliferation of science and modern medicine and, you know, the overall decline in religious interest. But that's actually not the case. So according to the Vatican in 2021, there were over 500,000 requests for exorcisms in Italy alone. Some exorcists in Rome were seeing 30 to 50 requests per day from people claiming to be possessed by demons. There are millions of cases of alleged possessions worldwide today. And the Catholic Church says about 1 in 5,000 of these claims of possession turn out to actually be legitimate demonic possessions.
That's still a lot. It hit a, I don't know if you just mentioned this or not, but it hit a peak in 2018, which is very recent. And that's pretty terrifying to think about, was that reports of people being possessed is only going up. This seems like something that would have happened a long time ago and maybe got phased out with the world becoming more secular in a lot of places, but it's
it hasn't
not the case.
It really hasn't been the case, which is pretty crazy. So anyways, this particular one was in the 1920s, but Anna, or her name was not actually Anna, her name was Emma Schmidt. Most accounts say she was born in Marathon, Wisconsin. Some say she was born in Milwaukee, and other accounts say that she was actually born in Switzerland and then moved to Wisconsin shortly after with her German parents. But, you know, she loved to go to church with her mom. She went as many times as twice a day. And originally she wanted to become a nun, but that was before her mother died and her father kind of took over and used to ridicule her mother and her for going to church. And, you know, the mental abuse there was really only the beginning of the horrible things that this guy would do, because he was abusive mentally, emotionally, sexually to this poor girl. And, you know, you could surmise that a lot of the what they considered to be demonic possession could have just been, like mental, you know, she could be having like mental health issues because of, you know, a lot of kids who are abused as
because of trauma. Children.
Exactly.
She could have, but they do say that one of the things that leads to or opens you up for demonic possession is abuse, and especially the kind that she was suffering. So this basically makes you a prime target for possession, and that's how it can start a lot of times.
Yeah, one of the things that child abuse can lead to is what's called dissociative identity disorder, which is what they used to call multiple personality disorder. And that's where you used to get people with, you know, different personalities, you know, different voices. So a lot of possession cases, people have speculated that that was, you know, what it could have been. But there are just so many different aspects to this case that while on one hand you could say, yeah, this sounds like, you know,
psychological issues.
Psychological issues. Thank you. And on the other hand, there's details that just don't fit for that. You know, like if you take the exorcist account at face value, right? And which, you know, you either take it at face value or you don't, but we're here to discuss the demonic possession, so we're going to take it at face value. She's leaping out of the bed and clinging to walls, right? These voices are coming from her while she's not conscious.
She's straight up passed out and she was still communicating.
Exactly. So, you know, there's just so many things in here that you can't explain away with, you know, psychological issues. So it's hard to say, but she was exorcised originally by the Father Theophilus, the priest there, when she was young, about 14. And he came in and did a lot of things that you've seen like Ed Warren talk about and other people who have sat in on exorcisms. Richard Gallagher is another one who says that they do these like cursory tests to see if
not the comedian, either. Right?
Yeah, is that Richard Gallagher, the guy that smashes watermelons?
I believe he just goes by Gallagher. I don't know what his first name is, but Richard Gallagher is a medical psychologist.
Is he Gallagher too, the brother that bought the original Gallagher's comedic act and smashed watermelons?
You know more about this than most.
You know too much about that comedian. Died recently, I believe, didn't he?
Gallagher? Which one?
I think so. Oh, well, sorry.
I'm just very confused here. I'd like to.
Why don't you tell us, Rob? You're the expert.
Talk about fruit smashing Gallagher.
You've read all his books.
Continue.
But what I was saying is they have these cursory tests to weed out people who are faking demonic possessions, and what they do is he takes the holy water, he has the real holy water, and he has the fake holy water in his pocket, and he won't, you know, the person who's possessed doesn't know what's what. He'll spritz her with it, and that's what Father Theophilus did. He spritzed her with the fake holy water and she didn't respond, and then he spritzed her with the real holy water and she freaked out, and they said that the water was like sizzling and popping on her skin, which is,
yeah,
you know, something.
There's quite a few things with this case that lead me to believe that it's real, and it's hard to debunk a few of them. I know obviously we would like to see the footage, a lot of these things. I mean, this was early to have footage anyways, just from the time frame alone. I have recently watched some footage that got released from some of Ed and Lorraine Warren's, boom, check that off your bingo card, but from some of their exorcisms. And it is strange to see these people speaking different languages. She apparently spoke, I think it was 5 different languages. She's speaking Italian, Polish, Latin, and I think there was German. A couple others, German. And these were all languages that she hadn't known. And she's just speaking in these tongues. It's like,
there's a little bit of pushback on that, on some of them, right? So I don't know about Polish, right? But the other Italians, I mean, the other Italians, the other languages, there's at least somewhat of an explanation for it, right? So if she was going to church twice a day, Catholic church, right, she would at least be familiar with Latin prayers. So if someone's praying in Latin, she would probably recognize that because she's probably heard it all, because a large portion of Catholic services are in Latin. So that's number one. German, her parents were German, migrated from Germany. So I'm sure she would understand German as well.
There was Italian.
Hebrew, right? Yeah. So Hebrew, you don't know, like, and they also, something I didn't mention is that they believe that she probably has an elementary education at best, right? Because the time that she was dealing with the initial possessions, she was between the age of 12 and 14. So they believe that her education probably would have stopped at that point. So how do you learn 5 different languages? Maybe she's familiar with German. She obviously speaks English. Maybe she's familiar with some Latin because of the amount of church that she went to. But how do you explain all the other ones?
Right. It's not like she's having a full-blown conversation with a random Polish dude that's just standing in the corner. Like, maybe she's just muttering a few phrases that she had picked up if she was faking it. But, I mean, there's a long list of other things that happened. Again, we're taking them at their word, that she couldn't have done. She couldn't just crawl up the wall and cling there. She couldn't.
Right.
Like, they said her lips bloated to the size of her hands.
Yeah. They said her head doubled in size.
Yeah. They thought
that's another thing. So with demonic possessions, there are 3 signs of a demonic possession, according to the Catholic Church. And we're talking about possessions from the Catholic context, because that's the context of the story was provided to us. It's through the exorcist, who happens to be Catholic. So according to the Catholics, 3 signs of demonic possession is unusual strength, fluency in a language not formally studied, and knowledge of events unknown to the possessed person. So Anna showed all 3 of these signs. Heavily. And they say, in order to open yourself to a demonic possession, there needs to be some sort of invitation, whether it's through a Ouija board, tarot cards, provocation, invocation, or a curse. Again, this is according to the Catholics. I know that most people who practice tarot cards don't believe that that's has anything to do with the demonic, but the Catholic Church as an entity, they basically took anything that wasn't Catholic and demonized it. If it's not Catholic, it's a demon, basically. So that's where tarot cards comes into play. So we don't know if she played with a Ouija board. We don't know if she dealt with tarot cards. We don't know if she provoked demons. I assume she probably didn't.
I think so, but I would say the most likely reasons would either be the quote unquote curse that her parents had placed on her, or not her mother, but her dad and his new stepmom or whatever.
Her aunt, yeah.
Her aunt. And then there's also the theory, now I don't know if it's the Catholic Church's theory, but it's a going theory that some sort of traumatic event could open you up as a...
Susceptible to demonic possession. So yeah, so either way, her dad was the problem, because he was the one who played... Well, his dad and the aunt placed the curse on her. And he was also responsible for the abuse.
They said that they were slipping stuff into her food, because she had that initial exorcism that they thought cured her when she was, I think, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And the father and the sister, aunt, wife, midwife, whatever it was, were slipping stuff into her food over the years that was supposed to perpetuate the curse a little bit more.
And yeah, they were enchanting herbs, I believe. Was what they were slipping into her food.
Correct.
So that was the curse. And
Yeah, that's a pretty terrible thing to do to your kids.
How you try to curse me. What are we doing here? Like, you've tried to curse me in the past. You just sucked at it, but yeah, you've attempted it.
You've been sprinkling small pieces of sandpaper into your food.
Oh, my God.
No, but she knew things like the other thing that you had said, like another sign of possession was knowing things that you're not supposed to know. And she was calling out these super jacked nuns in the room, and she was listing off sins that they had committed as kids, probably using steroids and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The funniest thing, so I got the a lot of this information from the pamphlet, which is not technically a book because it's too short, but it's a pamphlet which was compiled by, the name of the priest slips my mind, but it was based off the case notes of Father Theophilus. And I completely just lost my train
of thought. And they literally described the nuns as the strong nuns.
Yeah, athletic nuns was the description. Like the most, the strongest, most athletic nuns to hold her down.
It works out since the demons are bringing their starting five all-stars. We have to bring in the nun starting five. It's Space Jam.
It's mayhem.
Exorcist mayhem. Jam, right? Where?
And if you ever saw the movie, The Exorcism of Anna Eklund.
Don't.
It's a. We're trying to convince Rob to watch it all week. We haven't been convincing enough. It's a really, really, really bad movie. And
I saw through this ruse immediately.
What, when I said you have to watch this movie, it is very, very scary. Yeah,
I knew immediately. Well, I knew immediately.
Have any of you seen this movie, The Exorcism of Anna Eklund? Actually, some of the footage that Dave used in the video part of it was from this, but it was god awful. The acting was terrible. The worst part of the whole thing was the score. But you could pick and choose all the different terrible things, and they didn't even follow the story. Like, this is a horrible story. They didn't follow it. This is not a movie review, but I do want to bring up the jacked nuns, because at some point in the movie, there actually is like a kung fu fight scene with the nuns versus everybody else. And they had zero regard for the nuns' lives. Now, mind you, they had been, you know, doing these exorcisms on Anna Eklund for like months, right? Maybe years. So they've had her, they've been doing these exorcisms and taking very careful and being very careful not to kill her or not to hurt her in any way, because they know that she's possessed. Then all the nuns get possessed, and all of a sudden they're bashing their heads in with the doors and stuff. It's like, wait, these are all the nuns. These are your employees. Yeah. All of a sudden it was all out the window. Anyway, it's dumb.
Did they at any point in this movie start yelling out, "I can't believe you committed exorcism"?
No,
I can't believe you committed an exorcism.
They may have. Yeah. Do nuns not usually do kung fu? I don't know. That is a stereotype that we're looking to shake. You know, we don't want to perpetuate any of that. So I would assume so.
I would hope so.
Mariah says, have you been to Catholic school? Those nuns don't mess around. Yeah, they have athletic nuns there too.
This is true. Anyways, back to the case of poor Anna Eklund here. She, the parents renew the curse, right?
Captain McSlug says nun foo. That hurt me to read.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So shortly after the initial exorcism is successful, then Anna's parents, or her father and aunt, find out that she was exorcised of the demons, and they're like, no, we can't have this. And they renewed the curse. And they did that by invoking that one verse from the scriptures from Matthew, where it says that if you exorcise one demon, then seven more demons are going to come back 10 times worse, basically is what that passage meant, condensed.
But sounds like it would be seven times worse.
Maybe. I mean, sure. If we're going to. Sure. Seven demons. Well, 49 times worse. Seven demons, seven times worse. I don't know. Whatever the math is. Who cares? It was bad. So they renewed the curse on her.
Seven times one.
And despite the fact that she was had initially been doing better after the exorcism, she starts going back towards the hatred for the Catholic Church, the violent thoughts towards the priests, and she was having like crazy sexual thoughts towards the priest also, that the exorcist believed was the demon Beelzebub trying to coerce her to get the priest to break his vows.
It has to be, right? Because there's no one that's ever had a sexual thought for a man named Theophilus or whatever the hell his name was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Now exactly. You've alienated all of our listeners named Theophilus.
I'm sorry.
So Theophilus Reisinger, who has a friend up in Erling, Iowa, named Joseph Steiger, he reaches out to Joseph and he says, hey, I got to pull this woman out of her hometown, and I want to perform this major exorcism at your convent, because he was afraid that if word got out, you know, in that small town that she was seriously possessed, that it would just destroy her reputation forever. Because back then, back in the, you know, the late 20s, you know, the reputation for something like that could really destroy a person. So this part's kind of interesting, because Joseph Steiger originally was like, I'm not comfortable with that, but since you're my friend, I'll at least ask the Mother Superior, believing that the Mother Superior was going to absolutely say no way. And Father Isinger was like, oh, okay, well, if that's the case, then great. I'll see you tomorrow, because I already got her permission before I had this conversation with you. So he like tricked his friend into getting him to host this exorcism. So they head up to Erling, Iowa, and things immediately just start going crazy. There was car trouble on the way to get there. The car wouldn't start, et cetera, et cetera. Seems minor, but the exorcist believes that it was the devil messing with him. And then as soon as Anna gets there, the nuns try and bless her food, and then they bring it into her, and she knew right away that the food was blessed, threw it at the wall, threw a temper tantrum. They brought her back unblessed food, and she ate it no problem. So this is just another one of those things that say, you know, how could she know that every single right. time?
No, you're right. It's like the she didn't, you know, the nuns didn't pass the test. I wonder if they were pretty obvious about it. Like, here's your definitely not blessed food.
Yeah, exactly.
Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, they sold it as well as you sold me watching that terrible movie.
So scary. Gotta watch it. It was, it was that. And then the other thing was that when they would speak to her in Latin, she would just speak back in Latin. But when they prayed for her in Latin, she would lose her mind. So exactly. She was obviously understanding what they were saying, and she obviously didn't take well to the prayers.
Right. So the first session, which lasted, I believe, a few weeks, was they saw a whole bunch of stuff, like the vomiting and the basically just the tantrums and the Latin and the voices. And it was very taxing on everyone involved. The nuns were having a hard time with it. Obviously, the Joseph Steiger, the pastor who hosted them, was not having a good time. He was mad. He was angry with Father Theophilus for bringing this. And Father Theophilus kind of looked around and said, all right, we need to break. So they took a break for a few weeks, and they started back up in September, basically a month after the first one started. And this is when the articulated speech from Anna came into play, and they were introduced to the demons that were possessing her. So she was possessed by a multitude of demons. There were like a whole bunch of like lower ranking demons that would try and interrupt, and they would come through in like kind of intermittent patterns, just basically trying to cause chaos, we assume. But the first demon that actually announced itself was the demon known as Beelzebub. So he was originally a Philistine god that the Catholic Church considers to be one of the seven major demons representing the seven deadly sins. Beelzebub represents gluttony. And in Hebrew scripture, the name Beelzebub directly translates to the Lord of Flies. He claims to cause demons to be worshipped by men and excite priests to lust. So, as we mentioned earlier, that's the connection that the exorcist drew between Anna and the original priest from her hometown.
Am I wrong in thinking that he's not a lower-ranking demon? I thought he was like second in command down there, like second to Satan, no?
He's not. So if that sounds confusing, all right. So the first demon was Beelzebub, and then there were several other major demons, and then there were lower ranking demons also. But the first major demon to announce himself was Beelzebub.
Oh, I thought you were saying that he was one of the lower.
No, I did. I worded that weird.
Rob, which one is that? That one. Okay, gotcha. All right. So you have the visuals there.
Right.
And just to remind everybody, on our show, he is referred to as Beelzebub. That's how we say his name here on Hometown Ghost Stories.
Thank you.
Bronet says, Luke, the writer of the Gospel of Luke in the book of Acts, addressed the letter to his friend Theophilus.
Oh,
that's an interesting connection.
That is a weird connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. The second demon.
Did it mention in the book of Luke that Theophilus just never pulled chicks?
Bet Theophilus was so handsome.
He never pulled any chicks. It's just, you can't with that name. It's impossible.
You know, I bet Theophilus is laughing from the heavens with his family surrounding him at Rob with no family. Like, yeah, brutal. I don't pull chicks.
Brutal. So the second demon to announce itself announced himself as Judas Iscariot. He announced himself as a demon.
Judas's carrot? Was that his last name?
Rocky. Not carrot.
Cool, man. Judas Iscariot was one of the 12 apostles, the one who sold out Jesus to the Romans and eventually led him to his crucifixion. He felt real guilty and ended up hanging himself. The reason that he was sent to possess Anna, according to the demon that was claiming to be Judas, is he was sent to possess Anna and attempt to get her to hang herself like he did in life. And he claims to be the demon of suicide. So with this one, you know, a demon is technically supposed to be a non-human entity. So Judas Iscariot, who was an actual human who walked the earth, you wonder if this was really his spirit possessing her, or if it was just another demon playing
using demon that tricks. Name. Wouldn't be the first time.
Exactly. But I don't know. We don't make the rules. As
I really, really want to play the clip that I played for you guys before the show now, after we've talked about how Judas met his end.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Inside jokes. Fun for everyone. So the
Rachel knows it. So at least there's one person other than us.
I was wondering how we were going to fit this into the episode today. Here it is. But so the third demon to announce itself was the spirit of Mina. Mina was Anna's aunt, and during the exorcism, the voice came through. The voice had come through earlier, right, where she was, it was a higher pitched voice, and they're like, what is this high pitched voice? Because there were all these really low bellowing voices, really deep, scary sounding voices. Then there was this one high pitched voice. When the high pitched voice eventually announced itself, it admitted to being the spirit of Mina, her aunt. And during the possession, it confessed to murdering four of her own children during her life. So Mina, who was accused of witchcraft and blood magic and Satanism, you know, you've got to wonder, maybe.
At this point, was Mina dead?
Mina and Jacob are both dead, yeah, the parents, but at this point. Yeah, it'd be tough for the spirits to haunt if the wasn't dead yet.
But I wouldn't be surprised, again, if they were just using different names and stuff. But that's a pretty bad detail.
Yeah. And the fourth demon to announce itself was the demon spirit of her father, Jacob. He confessed to abusing Anna. He confessed to cursing Anna. He claimed that he owns Anna because he was her father and should have the right to abuse her. So all these voices were coming from Anna, whether she was awake, whether she was asleep, whether she was in the middle of a mental fit, they were just coming from her and you know, an articulated speech, arguing with the exorcist. So pretty creepy stuff, these four main demons, plus all the lower ranking demons. And then Lucifer himself announced his presence. And this was the demon who predicted the car accident with Father Steiger. He said, the end of the week, this will also, and the voice coming from Anna says, the end of the week, you're going to have something horrible happen to you. And Father Steiger, who was already not comfortable with this whole thing, already mad at his friend, Father Theophilus, you know, that's a great point. Sorry, Anna Campbell came in and just said that maybe her father was possessed also. I hadn't even considered that. That's a good point. But back to the Father Steiger thing. He said, so something's going to happen to you towards the end of the week. So Friday comes around and Father Steiger is a little nervous. He wakes up and he has to deliver the final rites to somebody who was dying or had died. So he had to go do that, and he gets in his car, and he's got this prediction from the devil in the back of his mind that he's driving extra careful. He knows the road. He knows the way and everything, and he's driving as careful as possible, and he's just all of a sudden overcome by this dark cloud, just completely blinds him, and he spins off the road and gets into a horrible car accident, survives. He ends up getting to deliver his final rite, and then he gets back to the convent, and before he has a chance to tell anybody what happened, Anna calls him out and says, that car accident. He's like, I wrecked your car. Haha, you're lucky I didn't kill you, basically. Mm-hmm. And that was the spirit of Lucifer. So
you've seen these predictions in a lot of poltergeist cases. I just finished reading about the one in Connecticut. I mentioned it earlier, and that happened like nonstop in that one. They just kept predicting. He's like, oh yeah, on this day you're going to hurt your leg, on this day you're going to hurt your eye, on this day you're going to go blind, and literally everything that this little possessed kid was predicting was coming true. We'll cover that story eventually, but it's interesting, the reoccurring things. And we talk about the car accidents on a lot of things, particularly with cursed possessions. It was with the Annabelle doll, and I believe Robert the doll, and obviously the chair as well, cursed chair, where there was a lot of car accidents that were connected with these things. So careful driving out there if you're messing with the demons.
This is true. Didn't we get a an iTunes review or an Apple Podcast review that says they were listening to one of our episodes about demonic possession and their car started acting funny.
Yes. Remember that one? Yeah, that was early. That was early in the beginning of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was the Conjuring episode. Mm-hmm. Creepy. But yeah, it is. It's pretty weird. Yes. So the final session is when the actual possession was quote unquote resolved. So this was when the Father Theophilus had thought that he had the demons weakened enough. So according to demonologists that have studied this, they say that when the demons announce themselves, that's when they're starting to weaken. So you, basically the way an exorcism works is the priest will weaken the spirits with just prayer for hours.
Yeah, a lot of time, like the knockout punches when they ask it for its name, right?
Right. So they'll ask for the name. They won't get the name. Once you get the name, that's how you know that this is on, you know, you're winning, overcome the hard part. You're winning the battle now. So once he gets all the names, he knows that it's basically, you know, the end is in sight, light at the end of the tunnel. So he finally demands that the spirits that are possessing her, that they head back to hell and announce themselves on the way out. And they do exactly that. Anna stands up and yells out, Beelzebub, Judas, Mina, Jacob, hell, hell, hell. And then she falls down back into bed and she speaks in her own voice for the first time, which was a great turn of events for this story. And the Father Theophilus, he declared the exorcism successful and went on with their life. The problem is that she considered, what's weird is the way that the story is told. It's like, and then the exorcism was complete and the possession was over. And she lived the rest of her life pretty much normal, except for just a few minor possessions here and there. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What was that last part?
Again, this is a recurring thing with other possessions as well, where it's like, yep, demon was gone, but occasionally it would just laugh at them or predict the future from time to time, just little things. It's like, wait, what? Like, you have to live with this forever? So I've heard this in several cases, is that like you'll just get little glimpses where it just reminds you that it hasn't gone anywhere.
Exactly. So that was the case with this one. And this story actually gets a little bit weirder. So after the exorcism was complete and the possession was resolved, she ended up being plagued with smaller possessions for the rest of her life. And she began getting messages from Jesus Christ, she claimed. And the Father Theophilus was monitoring this, knowing that there might be some like residual stuff with the exorcism after the fact. So he's kind of like paying attention, but not, you know, taking a whole bunch of, you know, not giving it too much credit, until she started saying that she has messages from Jesus Christ predicting who the Antichrist is and when the Antichrist is coming. So he might not have paid too much mind to the claim, except that there was a 19th century mystic named Catherine Emmerich who made the exact same prediction that the Antichrist would come 50 years before the year 2000. So this being in the 1930s, they were looking for somebody who was around the age of 12 at that point. So they started basically looking at 12-year-olds who might be evil. And they came up with two names that are interesting. The first name that was interesting that they came up with at the time was a 12-year-old in Siberia by the name of Mikhail Kalashnikov. And they kept an eye on him for a while. He ended up not being the Antichrist.
The hell did he do?
What's that?
How'd he get on that list?
Because he was a problem child who was into like making weapons, basically. And he ended up
was like being really good at making weapons.
Well, he ended up being really good at making weapons because he was ended up being the in the Soviet Union. He ended up being the creator of the AK-47 assault rifle and the RPK light machine gun. So not the Antichrist, but definitely was responsible for several deaths one way or another.
Anyone needs to win a 1v4. The RPK light machine gun is absolutely meta in Warzone 2 these days. I bring the important information here.
I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming. But the other name that they gave out, which was interesting, was Georgios Papadopoulos from Greece.
That is literally my father-in-law's name.
I know it is. not him. Different guy. But he was like a 12-year-old at the time, and he ended up...
It's just so you don't sound like an absolute American, it's Yorgo.
Yorgo Papadopoulos. Sorry. Thank you. He was a Greek military officer. He ended up being a Greek military officer and political leader who, or political dictator who ruled Greece as a dictator from 1967 to 1973. So neither of these guys ended up being the Antichrist. It's just weird that she...
It is good news that my father-in-law is not the Antichrist. Exactly. Thank you for bringing that up here on the show. There was another one who was involved in politics, and like he got arrested for something or something along the lines during the last administration. And I was like, Jesus, this name, you just can't get a break. But the last name Papadopoulos is like the last name, like Smith. Thomas or Adams or Smith or something like that in the United States. So it's very common in Greece.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the exorcism of Anna Ekland, pretty much the whole thing. And it was a very disturbing case.
Yeah, what I find like particularly interesting with this, and I don't know why this one point stuck out at me, but it was when the priest got like conned his priest buddy into coming to do this exorcism or whatever. And the guy was like pissed. He's like, oh, this is too much for me. It's like, dude, if I were a priest or if I was like studying in the field of exorcisms and this is what I wanted to do, this is all the proof you need that everything that you've been studying your entire life was not a waste of time, right? This is, unless he sees this stuff all the time, it's like, I've seen this song and dance before, or if it wasn't legit. But at the same time, it's like, dude, like if this is an actual demonic possession, you should be pumped about this, that you're validating that it is legitimate and real.
Yeah. Creepy stuff. And it's funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting when we see these demonic cases, right? Because my brain always goes skeptic. And it's just like, oh, yeah, possessed by Beelzebub and Lucifer. It just sounds just so fantastical and just crazy and just far-fetched. But then there's just so many details that are just hard to refute. And there are so many cases of people experiencing similar things. We like consistency when we're looking at these things. You know, scientific research, you know, they take consistency is part of scientific research. So it's hard to completely dismiss it when there's right. So much blatant evidence in your face.
It's easier to accept the accounts for stuff when you have more evidence. The Vatican doesn't release much of it, but we have, it is out there. There is video footage of different exorcisms happening, and there's stuff that you really can't explain. Like they got people who can't even speak their own language and they're just speaking fluently in Latin during a possession. It's just horrifying stuff to see. You know, kids listing off demons. I know the internet is around now, so they could look up anything, but I mean, kids listing off like, you know, the seven helpers of Satan or whatever you were talking about earlier. It's like, how do they figure that out and memorize it and remember this kind of stuff?
Exactly. The Bell Witch case, I forget where that was, somewhere down south.
Your connection's shoddy. It's possessed. But the Bell Witch case is another interesting one.
Well, that was one where there was a little kid who was listing off demonic names and should not have had any knowledge of them.
And the other thing we got to remember is that during the time of this, right, it's not like today where there's so many ways to be famous via movies or, you know, the internet or stuff like that. So it's not like she was the faking it for the attention is like less likely back then, I would say, because what attention?
They were keeping it a secret and they masked her name too, right? So
right. So that's the other thing. Like
it's well documented, but it didn't turn into like a celebrity case is what you're saying. Like a lot of these other cases do, where they just have press just lining the street and protesters and stuff with, you know, you are the Antichrist signs and everything. It's like, that's not, she wasn't looking for a book deal.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's where I was going with that.
Right. They gave her a pseudonym because all of the attention would have been negative and detrimental to her future reputation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the point.
Yeah, I think it's legitimate. Obviously, we're putting a lot of weight in on what these priests are saying and just kind of taking their word for it, taking her word for it. But it seems like it's a legitimate case of demonic possession.
Yep. Definitely one of the crazier ones we've covered for sure. I mean, there's other crazy ones to cover, but this one, just the documentation to back this one up and the crazy stories that surround it it's just baffling.
You know, what's interesting about this one too, is with all anytime you see a demonic possession case and they start talking about tropes that you see in the Exorcist movie as details, you're like, ah, man, I saw that in the Exorcist, be original at least. This one had those tropes, but it happened way before the Exorcist was written.
Yeah. This one created those tropes, if you will.
Exactly.
Like the vomiting thing was really interesting. Like she was just vomiting so much that like, she hasn't eaten or drank like anything in days. Where is this coming from? And she just was profusely just vomiting and releasing fluids from her body in other ways, just like nonstop. And it's just, it made no sense. And she was, you had mentioned it, I believe, she was throwing up like tobacco leaves and stuff. Like, when did she eat tobacco leaves? It makes no sense. Yeah. So it was a lot of things that can't be explained. So that's pretty much
it. So where do you guys lean on it? You guys both think that this is probably more likely a real case rather than not real?
It's hard to put it one way or another without seeing actual evidence, but if we're taking them at their word, then how can you not?
Yeah. I think that this, you know, on a skeptical side, if you forget the things that you can't explain, you look at it, this mental illness plays a part in it. And, you know, this is based on the account of a priest who may have had an agenda, who wrote it, not necessarily Father Theophilus, but the German priest who compiled the actual pamphlet. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what's exaggerated. It's hard to tell, it was so long ago, but at face value, there's some stuff in there that's just hard to refute.
Mm. What about you, Rob?
I mean, it feels like it'd be more real than not real, just based on some of the evidence that we've seen in other cases that we can like cross-reference that these things were happening. Her knowledge of such cases is non-existent because some of them happened after her, right? And like, it all kind of adds up that it's more likely than not, I would say. But again, we are talking about a time where they didn't understand mental health issues, and I always kind of like lean on the skeptical side based on that as well, right? Like, because we still are learning about that stuff. So like, our knowledge now is way more advanced than it was 100 years ago. And in 100 years, it'll be even more advanced, and we probably still won't know everything. So it's tough. I guess I lean towards it being more real, but I do understand the skepticism surrounding any case of possession. Mm-hmm. For sure.
You have to take that stuff into account, and you have to, obviously, if you're dealing with this, you have to go seek like actual help from a real doctor to make sure that you know what you're dealing with. It seems like in a lot of the cases that I've read up on, they use exorcism as like a last resort, where it's like, right, well, we don't know what else it could be, so let's just do it.
I don't know if they would have back then, though, right? Like now, yes, but like back then, like exorcism might have been like a quicker alternative than other stuff.
I think
there were probably fewer alternatives back then. That's for one,
right?
But I know that the Catholic Church has always been hesitant to do an exorcism. It's always, like Jesse said, like the last case scenario, like the worst case scenario. Nowadays, there are doctors who will prescribe exorcisms as like a placebo to psychiatric patients who just believe they're possessed. So a doctor will just prescribe an exorcism, and they'll have like a priest or a shaman or a monk or whatever religion they are, just have them come in and perform an exorcism. And a lot of times it works, has that placebo effect.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
So this was definitely an interesting case. I mean, I do want to say I'm super happy that you did Iowa right after I did Iowa, because, you know, when we think of haunted states, Iowa is the one that jumps to the top. So Jesse,
now it does.
What are you covering next week in Iowa?
I don't know. Something. I haven't figured that out yet. My house is haunted, by the way. Thought one of my kids were up. I was ready to go put him back to bed. There's nobody there.
So. Papa Squatch says my doctor prescribed me exercise. It's almost the same.
It's fair. It's fair. Do we want to get into some 5-star reviews?
Yeah.
All right. So we've got two. I'm going to call an audible. I'm going to allow this one time. I'm not doing it again. I am going to read 1 4-star review because it's a good review. However, next time,
please read it in an angry voice, at least.
All right.
Put on a mad face at minimum.
Well, hang on. I assume that this 4-star review hit 4 stars by accident because it was a very positive review. So if you're listening and you're hearing this review read back, you can go back and edit that to the 5 stars that you
mentioned. All right, Rob, just half your face angry, please. Good.
All right, this is from Awesome McGingerstein, and it's titled Too Sweet. Great show. Love the chemistry between you all. Love the content. P.S. Original Pet Sematary was better than the remake. That's just me. So that was our 4-star review. Never again will I do it, but that was the 4-star review.
No. Whoops. All of a sudden, this is just the Jesse show again. Like, wait a second. Too much spotlight on Rob. Yeah, I'm terrified this episode. Right. Yeah. Any other fives?
We got two more that are both 5-stars. One of these I thought was your burner account until I read the title of it, and I'm like, there's no way Jesse knows this reference, so that I know it's not Jesse. But it's from Kiki Moore's Great Escape. It's titled A Very Nice, Very Spooky Podcast, which is a Dan Housen reference that I know. If Dan Housen means nothing to Jesse, he doesn't know what that is. Excellent podcast to listen to if you're into the paranormal or when life makes you feel trapped in a box. Episode 10 is a personal favorite, which I believe was the Emily Morgan Hotel. Jesse should cover a haunted school or orphanage in the UK. He will make it feel authentic like no one else. 5 out of 5 stars.
My accent is perfect, isn't it?
We're in Iowa. Now, granted, if you go watch The Exorcism of Anna Eklund movie that takes place in Iowa, they all have English accents.
They all have English and Irish accents for no reason.
Yeah. All right. So this other one, this is a really good review, a little bit longer. It's from VJ Forever, first-time podcast listener. In November 2022, I was doing a lot of work on my house and yard and wanted to listen to something other than news and political commentary. Several people told me I should listen to podcasts, but I didn't bother since my listening time is limited and I like to keep up on current events. I decided a podcast might be fun while I was working on stuff. For years, I listened to books on tape. I tried to find paranormal fiction and stumbled on your podcast. I was intrigued since I live in southeastern Mass. My daughter goes to college in Salem, and I have several family members who live in the Bridgewaters in the Bridgewater Triangle. So the local spin interested me. Plus, you guys have mentioned Weird Massachusetts, a book I bought years ago and love. I was hooked on the first episode and binged up to date. Since I also love to research, I looked into several of the areas and people you have mentioned. I even listened to your horror movie reviews, which at first I didn't have an interest in, but you guys make it fun. Plus, I know I'll never watch those movies, but I like knowing the plot and the ending. Definitely 5 stars. Plus, I hope you guys do this for a long time. Would definitely recommend. So, very interesting spin on the horror movie reviews where people are listening to them without watching the movie and then just getting our spoiler-filled review of it.
I think it was Cody or maybe it was Matthew T or someone that had left a comment that just said, like, I watch these horror movie reviews just to know whether or not I should go see the movie. And he just fast forwards over to our ratings. I was like, all right, well, that's one way to use it. So as long as you're watching, that's all we care about or listening. Let me give a shout out to our patrons real quick. Jeannie R, Justin T, Lisa J, Mike B, Mom and Pops W, and Robert H, as well as Stephen V and Demon King. Those are our VIPs. Thank you guys so much for being a part of the VIP patrons. That's awesome. We have Anna C, Even Better Hometown Ghost Stories. Garrett, we have Jake V. We have Rachel B, Stephanie A, Sydney B, Anthony Angry Dave Rocks T, Brandon W, Brennan B, Captain McSlugs, Cody G, Huggy Bear, Kirillie J, Mark M, Matthew T, Mariah M, Papa Squatch, Sarah, Dave Loves Bacon R, Sarah W, Solar Flare, Soph, and we have Hooper. Thank you guys so much for as little as $3 a month. You two can be on this list, be in the credits. It's about time for a wheel spin, gentlemen, unless there's anything else you want to mention.
No, do we want to talk about some of the stuff coming up first before we do that?
Well, I don't know what's happening next week, so you take it away.
Well, Friday we have a Friday the 13th movie review dropping on the podcast feed and in the YouTube. Very original, Friday the 13th. We're going to drop Friday the 13th movie content. No one else has ever done it. We are the first show to ever do such a thing.
Fact.
Monday night, January 16th, my birthday, we are going to be doing a live stream doing our normal, what are they called? Creepypastas.
Campfire stories.
Campfire stories. And at the end, we will make up our own story. It'll probably only be an hour long stream because I didn't realize there was going to be an NFL game on Monday night. But and look at Demon King in the chat dropping $9.
$9.99 in super chat. Hang on 1 second. I need to see. Is Pinky on here? Because I see her saying stickers. All right, let's add her in. So for those of you hanging out and looking to possibly win the stickers, oh, look at that, John Q as well. Last second, everyone's jumping in. It's Audrey, not Aubrey. We had a long chat in private chat, whether it was Audrey or Aubrey, and it was Audrey. We were wrong.
I was wrong.
Anyway, so we're going to give this a spin. If I forgot your name on this list, I apologize, and I will enter you twice next week. So if you look
at the off as her last initials B. So when I read it as Aubrey.
Yeah.
That's right. Dyslexic. Okay. Let's give it a spin. The rules are you have to be here, and we'll see what to do with Papa Squatch if he wins, because he won last week. So did
Al Capone's on the wheel.
Well, who else won last week? Cody won as well. So those, by the way, those have been mailed out, and they you should be receiving your 5-pack of exclusive stickers soon. Here's the first spin. Let's take a look and see who wins here. And it is.
I want it to be Al Capone.
Me too. It is Rhonda S. Rhonda, if you're still here, why don't you go ahead and just type in chat. I'm going to give another spin. We're going to give away one more. This is lots of fun. Boom. I feel like Pat Sajak. He's not on Wheel of Fortune, is he? Yeah, he is. Yes, Pat Sajak? Yes. That's the right guy, right? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do it.
Al Capone
won. All right. Where's his grave? We have to go.
We have to send stickers
down. Just cover his grave in stickers.
Not arrested. Oh, and it is. That was so close. It was actually even better hometown ghost stories. That looks like a tie.
Oh, no.
My goodness, Stephanie. All right. Well, congratulations to the winners. You guys can also get entered in if you want to win some stickers. We have so many to give away. So just join the Discord, and we'll do a giveaway to new people on Discord and existing eventually. Anyways, I think that'll pretty much do it. Anything else, gentlemen?
No, that's going to do it for me.
All right, then. Catch you guys on... Are we going live on Friday? Is that the plan?
Monday. We're going live on Monday.
Monday we're live. Friday we're dropping Friday the 13th preview. We already discussed this. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.